What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. And on tonight's episode, I'm here giving you guys my thoughts on one of the best Super Bowls that I ever watched. The Chiefs get their back-to-back Super Bowl win against the 49ers. And I'm going to be talking about the lessons that I learned from Super Bowl 58. Why the NFL, some way, somehow, doesn't know how to stop Patrick Mahomes. Why is this dude always finding ways to win when it looks like all the chips are stacked against them? The 49ers, you know, they choked away another Super Bowl lead. They were up 10-0 at one point during this game. So what went wrong? What did Kyle Shanahan go wrong at with his decision-making late in the game? Also, what's next for San Francisco after this loss? Do they need to tear it down? Are they good with Brock Purdy? Is he the answer at quarterback? Got some thoughts on Brock Purdy's performance. Who are the standout rookies from this past NFL season? I'm going to be giving you guys my top 10 standout rookies from this season. And Mike Tomlin, according to reports, really likes Justin Fields. What would a Justin Fields trade to Pittsburgh mean for Kenny Pickett? How would it impact the Steelers' chances of being able to not only win a division, but make a deep playoff run? We got a very good episode tonight. If you haven't already, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. We're available on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. All you got to do is type in the JT Sports Podcast and whichever podcasting platform you like to use, and it will pop up. Or you can go down to the description down below, and there will be the links to the Apple and Spotify versions of the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share the pod with your friends, family members, and acquaintances, and make sure that you give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. And shout out to Daddy Bars in the comment section. He had me laughing with this comment. He said, "Mahomes greater than not about that action, Jackson." And that was a good one. Before we begin, here's a quick word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner, Mint Mobile, has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. Super Bowl 58 is in the books, and the Kansas City Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions once again. The Chiefs took down the 49ers 25-22, and there were a lot of lessons to be learned from this year's Super Bowl. The first one has to be, NFL fans, you guys hate success. You guys hate dominance, because all I saw on social media was a bunch of people commenting how the Super Bowl was rigged. They're tired of seeing Patrick Mahomes hoist the Lombardi damn near every single season. And I definitely understand your frustration. But I really feel like trying to say the Super Bowl was rigged and trying to hate on Patrick Mahomes really takes away what was a legacy moment for him. Because Patrick Mahomes, this dude has been dynamite all throughout this Super Bowl run for Kansas City. Nobody thought that they were even going to be able to win more than one playoff game at that. So not only do they beat the Dolphins in the wild card round, but they go on the road and get wins against the Bills and the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason why this is so impressive is because you look at what Kansas City has at receiver. They don't have a Tyreek Hill. They don't have a true number one. Their best wideout this year was Rashee Rice, a rookie who wasn't even a first-round pick. Yeah, you had Travis Kelce, but at one point, it looked like that dude was washed. And then all of a sudden, the playoffs comes around, and he's having the best playoff run of his career. Patrick Mahomes is one of those quarterbacks that truly is generational. Guys like Mahomes only come around once every 30 years. And to see what he did in Super Bowl 58 was really impressive. And I really feel like the people who are trying to make the Super Bowl seem like it was rigged and it was supposed to be the 49ers winning it, you really are taken away from what you saw with your eyes from one of the best quarterbacks to ever play this game. That Super Bowl was a masterclass performance out of Patrick Mahomes. And the fact that people just want to hate on this dude for doing what other teams can't do, which is win, really makes no sense to me. If you're mad about Kansas City continuing to win, be mad at the 49ers defense for giving Patrick Mahomes the last opportunity to win the game. All they had to do was blow out Kansas City, build on their 10-0 win or their 10-0 lead, and they wouldn't have had this issue. If you want to beat Patrick Mahomes, you got to blow him out. You can't give this dude the opportunity to win the game because he's going to get it done. NFL fans hate dominance. You want parity. I understand that. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with appreciating greatness. If you're a true fan of football, you should be somebody who, yeah, you don't have to love Mahomes. You didn't have to love Brady, but at least respect the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. Like, if you watch that Super Bowl, there's no way you can't say Patrick Mahomes carry Kansas City. You can't. Like, that dude put that team on his back throughout this playoff run. Their offensive line wasn't that good. The receivers led the league in drops. Patrick Mahomes on 4th-and-1 made a big time run in that situation. There was another run that he made early during the game on 3rd down when he put his shoulder down and ran over a dude for the 1st down. How? Kansas City ran the read option right after he got that 4th-and-1 conversion. I thought they were trying to pull something that the Ravens did. You would have thought that Kansas City stole something out of the Ravens playbook the way they ran that read option with Patrick Mahomes. And that big run that he had to put the 49ers in the red zone, which eventually set them up for the game-winning touchdown in overtime, that was super impressive. What we saw out of Patrick Mahomes in Super Bowl 58 was an all-time great performance. And the fact that fans are hating on Mahomes for winning and dominating the NFL really takes away from what he did in that Super Bowl. It really did, because you're just so rooted in hating on him and trying to say it's rigged that you overlook just how great he played in that game. Another thing that can be taken away from this Super Bowl is that when you think about teams that have won the Super Bowl in the past, they're not always the most talented. All right, those Patriots teams after 2010 weren't that great. This was the same Tom Brady that played with Randy Moss, Wes Welker, and lost to Eli Manning. Eli Manning beat Tom Brady twice. And the Giants were never the better team on paper in that game. But yet, there's been games that the Patriots have won in the Super Bowl when they weren't the most talented team on paper. The reason why is because the best team doesn't always win the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is not about who has the better roster, who has the more talented team. It's about the team that's able to execute in the big moments, that's able to have the best game plan to win it all. Remember when the Rams had the best offense in the NFL going into that Super Bowl against the New England Patriots? They were averaging damn near 30 points a game. And they only got held to 3. Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, they got shut down. That's the prime example of why talent doesn't always indicate who's going to win the game. A lot of people that bet their money on San Francisco in this game, they got a really sour taste in their mouth Because their reasoning for taking San Francisco was they got the better team on paper. They got better receivers. They got more star players on defense. And why did they lose this game? Because of coaching. That's why the best team doesn't always win the Super Bowl all the time, because you may have the best team, but you still have to put your team in position to win the game. You have to make the right decisions on fourth down. You got to make the right adjustments after halftime. And those are things that the 49ers failed to do. And that's why Kansas City came away with the win. And what's even more funny is that the people who say that this thing is rigged, they seem to not check the news, but Vegas, they lost tons of money with the public smacking Kansas City. 70% of bettors out there took Kansas City to win this game in the cover. So if you think the NFL's rigged and Vegas has to make sure that they don't lose no money, then why did they lose so much money after this Super Bowl? You see, you were thinking that San Francisco was going to win because they were so much more talented on paper. They were so more dominant during the regular season. But once you get into the playoffs, it's a different game of football that's being played. The playoff games are not the same as the regular season games. The intensity is magnified. The stakes are higher. Decisions and mistakes get magnified. It's just a different brand of football, especially when you get into the Super Bowl. And the 49ers, they shot themselves in the leg with errors in the fourth quarter. You had the muff punt, which gave life to Kansas City. That gave them their first touchdown of the game. And then you had the decision to not go for it on third and four overtime. You kick the field goal, you play it safe, and you give Mahomes the opportunity to win the game. That's why the 49ers lost. Coaching decisions. Not being able to execute in big moments. They had several opportunities to win that game. They couldn't get Kansas City off the field in fourth and one in overtime. And their defensive line was feasting for the majority of the game, but they were nowhere to be found in the fourth quarter and in OT when it mattered the most. And that's why the best teams don't always win, because the best teams aren't always able to execute in these high-pressure situations when you need to win the game, when the game is in the balance. When it comes to Brock Purdy, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about how good is this dude? Is he just a testament to how good of a offensive mind Kyle Shanahan? And is he the taxi driver on the team that has already great roster that's carrying him and making him look better than what he actually is? Or is Brock Purdy actually a really great quarterback? Is he a top five quarterback in the NFL? And after watching his performance in this game, it's pretty evident what the answer is. Brock Purdy is really good, but he's not elite. He's not a Lamar. He's not a Josh Allen. He's not a Patrick Mahomes. And taken away from Brock Purdy's performance in this game, I didn't think that he played bad. I thought he played pretty good. The only thing is that he didn't play better than Mahomes when the game was on the line. You see, Brock Purdy's final drive, the 49ers got a field goal. Mahomes' final drive, he won the game. Brock Purdy played good enough for the 49ers not to lose, but he didn't play good enough for the 49ers to beat Patrick Mahomes. And that's not a knock on Brock Purdy. That's more of a testament to how great of a quarterback Patrick Mahomes is. But a guy like Brock Purdy, he has to be able to have the greatest game of his career. And he didn't do that in this game. He had a really good game, but not a good enough game to beat an all-time great. When Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles beat New England in the Super Bowl, it was one of the greatest performances that we've ever seen out of a backup quarterback in the history of not just the postseason, but in the Super Bowl. Nick Foles won Super Bowl MVP. They made a statue of this dude. Brock Purdy's performance was good, but not good enough to win. And that was pretty evident in this game. He's not a bad quarterback. He's not an average quarterback. He's a really good quarterback, but he's not a quarterback that's going to win you a game against a quarterback like this. And it's unfair to compare Brock Purdy to Patrick Mahomes anyway, because they're on two different levels. 98% of the league wish they could have a Patrick Mahomes. And in a game like this, it was evident who was the better quarterback. That's why I was telling people that Kansas City was going to win. Not just because you can't trust Kyle Shanahan in these situations, but even if Brock Purdy has a good game, he has to have an all-time great game to be able to go toe-to-toe with a guy like Patrick Mahomes. And I said that in my preview and prediction, this game was going to come down to if Brock Purdy was going to be able to put the 49ers in position to win the game. Was he going to be able to lead them on a game-winning touchdown drive to seal the deal? And he wasn't able to do that. So he had a good performance, but not a great performance. That's what Patrick Mahomes had. And that's what you need if you want to be able to take down the all-time great in the championship. Brock Purdy, he still has a lot of room to grow. This is only his second season, so there's no telling how good this dude can truly be. But right now, I say he's a top 10 quarterback. I definitely would take him over Tua. Hell, one thing that I really liked out of Brock Purdy in this game is that it's not like this dude just didn't show up when the game was in the balance. It's not like this dude just shrunk. He stood in there. Like when Mahomes and company scored that touchdown off that muff punt, you would have thought that it was it for the 49ers. All the momentum was going to swing the Chiefs' way. But what did they do? Brock Purdy led a really nice drive. He threw a great pass to Juwan Jennings for that touchdown, and the 49ers regained control of the lead. So it's not like Brock Purdy just wasn't doing anything. You know, like he was low-key throwing some shots at Mahomes, but it's just that he was throwing jabs when Patrick Mahomes was landing haymakers. He was landing heavy rights. Brock Purdy was landing medium-impact jabs to the body. You see, when you're playing Mahomes, you got to knock him out. You can't give him an opportunity to win. And that's what Brock Purdy and the 49ers did in this game. I never once watched this game and said, oh yeah, like Cam Newton was right about Brock Purdy. He's a fucking game manager. All I said was, you know, like this dude Brock Purdy is responding. It's games where I've seen quarterbacks play good in the first three quarters, fourth quarter come around and they just completely fall apart. The last time the 49ers lost to Kansas City, Jimmy G played pretty good for the first four quarters and 7 minutes. And then after that, Mahomes just took over the game. It wasn't that kind of situation. Brock Purdy actually was keeping San Francisco in control of the game at one point. And the reason why they ultimately lost was due to the fact that you just couldn't stop Mahomes. So Brock Purdy, to me, I think he gets way too much hate. I don't understand why. Why do so many people have so much criticism of somebody who was the last pick of the fucking draft? Like, why are we trying to compare this dude to guys like Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar when he's not? He's not that athletically. Brock Purdy is good in his own way with what he does well. Getting the ball out fast, throwing with great accuracy and anticipation, moving well in the pocket, and being able to extend plays. He's a really good quarterback. He's a top 10 quarterback. I'd say he's a top 7 quarterback. I would take Brock Purdy over Dak Prescott and Tua Tagovailoa. Honestly. So I don't really get the hate for a guy that was the last pick of the draft. I would think that more people would root for this dude to succeed and stop trying to prey on his downfall. This is somebody who was expected to be nothing. You feel me? This is one of those kinds of guys that you think people will rally behind instead of trying to find ways to bring him down. It's just a little bit weird. You know, I've never really seen a story like this. Normally, guys who get drafted late in the draft and end up having great careers, people root for. Now, Kyle Shanahan, you know, what I learned about him is this dude just doesn't know how to win in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. That's really all it is. Same thing that happened in this Super Bowl happened in the last Super Bowl. He had questionable game management. You know, the play calling was atrocious. And in the third quarter, where the hell was Christian McCaffrey? Christian McCaffrey barely got his number called in the run game in the third quarter. It's like Kyle Shanahan has games where he just gets a little tight and he just tries to go Mike Leach, Lincoln Riley, old school air raid. And that's not the style of football that the 49ers are known for. They're known for using the run game to set up the pass, to utilize play action, to get shots downfield. Never made no sense to me why Kyle Shanahan just out of nowhere weirdly just abandoned the run. Like, why do all these teams that Kansas City play try to outdo themselves and try to just outduel Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid? You're not going to be able to do that. Run the freaking football. Made no sense to me. And lastly, you know, for Kyle Shanahan, he should have went for it on 3rd and 4. I get it. It's a Super Bowl. Like, you got to take the points. But you got to remember that, you know, you don't get it on 3rd and 4. It's 4th and 4. You're about to give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes. Are you really about to trust your defense to stop an all-time great quarterback? Why not just try to win the game? And even if you're not able to, you know, stop Patrick Mahomes and he ends up scoring a touchdown anyway, okay, cool. They go for 2. You stop them from getting the 2-point conversion, you win the game. If they go for the field goal, you get the ball next. And the final possession, you know, whoever scores wins the game. So I don't really think that the decision for Kyle Shanahan to take the ball in overtime really would have had a big outcome on them winning or losing this game. They lost this game because Kyle Shanahan just wasn't aggressive enough. You had to go for it on 4th down. There's nothing called taking the points when you have Patrick Mahomes about to get the ball. You think Kansas City's about to take the points? No, they're aiming to win. And that's the problem with Kyle Shanahan. He doesn't aim to win in the fourth quarter. He aims to just play it safe when he's up. And that's why they continue to lose in these games. You can't expect to beat a dude like Patrick Mahomes by just getting the field goal. Especially when you're that close to scoring. Like, you got to capitalize off those red zone possessions. And not just that the 49ers not be able to stop Patrick Mahomes on defense, but they weren't able to capitalize off his mistake. When he threw that interception coming out of halftime on Kansas City's opening possession in the second half, you know what they did with it? Nothing. You know what they did with the Isaiah Pacheco fumble? Nothing. Kyle Shanahan doesn't know how to win these kinds of games. He's a great coach, great X's and O's guy. I think he's a really good leader and the players really do like him. But in the fourth quarter, he just gets, I don't know what happens to him. Honestly, it's just really weird. I never seen such a good head coach just melt down in these kinds of ways in the Super Bowl. When you get into these moments, you think it will bring the best out of Kyle Shanahan, but instead he just has questionable judgment, just does enough to try to stay in control, and that's not enough when you're going up against a guy like Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City and Andy Reid, who's been here before. You got to win the game. Kyle Shanahan just doesn't seem to know how to take the game by his throat. He doesn't know how to seal the deal. These are the lessons learned, or at least that I learned from Super Bowl 58. Let me know what you guys learned from this year's Super Bowl down in the comment section down below. I'm eager to hear your guys' responses. Patrick Mahomes in his first 6 seasons has won 3 Super Bowls, including 3 Super Bowl MVPs. He's been to 6 straight AFC championships. He's been to 5 or 4 out of the last 5 Super Bowls, winning 3 of them, including the last 2. And everybody thinks that Patrick Mahomes' success is because the referees are rigging the games for Kansas City to succeed, and the NFL wants their poster child to win it all because it's good for ratings. You see, Patrick Mahomes, to become the poster child of the NFL, he had to earn it. He had to work for it. The NFL just didn't see Patrick Mahomes get drafted to Kansas City and say, you know what, that's going to be the new face of the league. He had to prove himself. And you want to know why Patrick Mahomes continues to run the NFL? Because he actually knows what it takes to win. And you know what it takes to win? Being able to step up in the biggest moment when the game is on the line in the fourth quarter. Think about why the Ravens and the Buffalo Bills came up short against the Kansas City Chiefs. They didn't get blown out. Those games were close. The difference is that Patrick Mahomes made the big throws in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. He had that big throw to MVS, the final drive of the game against the Baltimore Ravens. Meanwhile, Lamar Jackson, late in the fourth quarter, he threw an interception to triple coverage. You had Josh Allen, who balled out in the divisional round against Kansas City. But in the fourth quarter, midway throughout, he overthrew Stephon Diggs. He overlooked Stephon Diggs when he was wide open trying to get the touchdown, and they had to take 3 points. The only quarterback that's been able to get through Patrick Mahomes to make it to a Super Bowl has been Joe Burrow. And when Joe Burrow did it, back when they beat the Rams, well, when they played the Rams and lost, what did he do in that AFC Championship game? Mahomes had 2 interceptions. Mahomes, he also did terribly or played terribly in the second half of that game in the AFC Championship that year they lost to the Bengals. And Joe Burrow played better than Mahomes in the fourth quarter. He made more big plays and more crucial moments to give Cincinnati the W. That's what you have to do when you play Patrick Mahomes. You have to be able to capitalize off his mistakes if he makes any. And you got to be able to outplay him in the fourth quarter. And the problem with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and all these other quarterbacks is that they're never able to outplay Patrick Mahomes in the biggest moments of the game, which is the last 5, 6, 7 minutes of the fourth quarter. Think about the Super Bowl that just got wrapped up. Brock Purdy played insanely well in that game. But on his final drive, he led the 49ers to 3 points. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes led Kansas City to the win. That's the difference between Patrick Mahomes and the rest of the other quarterbacks in the National Football League. You put the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter, you know you're in good hands. You know he's going to win the game for you. The other quarterback on the other sideline from Patrick Mahomes, you know, you put the ball in their hands in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden, last 5 minutes, they forget how to be an elite QB. Like Lamar and Josh Allen. They're making stupid decisions. They're overthrowing guys that are wide open. You don't see that out of Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is a killer. He has that Mamba mentality, as people like to call it. You see, the reason why Patrick Mahomes is making it look easy isn't because of the refs. Patrick Mahomes doesn't need the refs to win. Hell, the refs weren't the reason why they won the Super Bowl. The reason why they won the Super Bowl was because Patrick Mahomes got it done for Kansas City. Brock Purdy couldn't. Josh Allen couldn't. Baltimore couldn't. Lamar, he won MVP this year, and I love Lamar. But if they were to give MVP after the season, it would go to Patrick Mahomes. Because look what Mahomes did with a way worse supporting cast than what Lamar Jackson had. You can say that Lamar is a more physically gifted quarterback than Mahomes, but what does it matter when Mahomes is the dude who's still finding ways to come on the winning side of things in the end? You see, the rest of the NFL is trying to find the next Patrick Mahomes, because when you have a dude this talented, it's really hard to lose. It makes it hard to find ways to lose games when you have a quarterback who can overcome mistakes, who can overcome limitations. Lamar Jackson, you know, as much as I love him, he isn't somebody that can overcome adversity when the game is on the line. You saw it in the AFC Championship. When adversity struck, what was he doing? Throwing his helmet on the sideline, getting frustrated, losing his composure, throwing interceptions in the triple coverage. Josh Allen, overthrowing Stephon Diggs, overlooking Stephon Diggs when he's wide open, trying to get the big play. With Mahomes, you don't see this. He gets into the fourth quarter, and that's when he just goes into God mode. The NFL can't beat Mahomes because these other quarterbacks don't know how to win the game when they go up against them. You want to beat Mahomes? Outplay him in the fourth quarter. And no quarterback in the league seems to be able to know how to do that. I don't know why. The fourth quarter, yes, the final quarter of the game. But what's so different about the football being played in the fourth quarter compared to the first three? Makes no sense to me. If you're playing good the first three quarters, why can't you play good the last 15 minutes of the game? Especially when you need to play your best ball to win the game for your team. for a trip of the AFC champ, for a trip to the AFC championship, or a trip to the Super Bowl. You know, Joe Burrow, he's the second best quarterback in the league to me right now. I don't care about the injuries. You want to know why? Because he's the only quarterback outside of Tom Brady to be able to beat Mahomes to make it to a Super Bowl. And that right there is the reason why Joe Burrow should be regarded higher than Lamar and Josh Allen. Those two guys can't seem to crack the code, but Joe Burrow has done it. You want to know why? Because Joe Burrow himself is also really reliable in the fourth quarter. Hell, you put the ball in Joe Burrow's hands with an opportunity to beat Mahomes, I can trust him to get it done 9 times out of 10. You can't say the same for Josh and Lamar. These teams in the fourth quarter, they just play it way too safe when you go up against them. And you can't play it safe against Mahomes. Mahomes and Kansas City don't play it safe. You heard what they said. Hell, if the 49ers would have scored a touchdown, guess what we would have done? We would have scored a touchdown and we would have went for two and won the game. You want to know why? Because Mahomes plays to win. These other quarterbacks are playing not to lose. That's what it seems like. And it just seems like they just get way too in their head. They get way too caught up in the moment. And they aren't able to take down Mahomes. And that's why this dude is the king of the NFL right now. It's the same thing with Tom Brady. Tom Brady, he crushed dreams. Same thing with Michael Jordan. And that's the same conversation that Patrick Mahomes is in right now. Think about how many great players we have in this league who don't have championships because of Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen, if Mahomes wasn't playing right now, he might have a Super Bowl right now. Same thing for Lamar. Hell, Kyle Shanahan, he might have 2 Lombardi trophies right now. And the conversation that we're having about him right now would be way differently than the one that we would be having if he had 2 Super Bowl wins right now and he was able to take down the Chiefs without Patrick Mahomes being the starting quarterback. Mahomes is one of those players that, as long as he's playing, it's going to be very few quarterbacks that are really going to be able to live up to what the high expectations are every single season, which is them being able to win a Super Bowl. You know, Lamar just won his 2nd MVP. People expect him to win a Super Bowl when it's all said and done. Bring another Lombardi to Baltimore, but that may never happen because of Patrick Mahomes. You know, think about Michael Jordan. When he was in his prime during the 90s, there were so many talented NBA players during that time who were some of the greatest to ever play, like Karl Malone, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, who never won an NBA championship because they couldn't get past Jordan. Michael Jordan was so dominant that the only time teams won championships during the 90s was when he was retired doing something else. Or he wasn't playing basketball. This dude played baseball, came back, and won 3 more damn championships. That shows you the level of dominance that Michael Jordan had on the NBA. And it's the same level of dominance that Patrick Mahomes has had on the NFL. And the same level of dominance that Brady had during his 2 decades in the league. People doubted Brady when he left New England. He won another Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in his first season during COVID. Out of all times you thought Tom Brady wouldn't be able to win a Super Bowl, you would have thought that COVID, him being on a new team, having to learn a new system, get acclimated to new teammates, he wouldn't be able to get it done. But it seems like every time you counted out Michael Jordan, or you counted out Tom Brady, or even Kobe, or even Mahomes, they find a way to pull through. They're guys that you never bet against. They're somebody that you may not like, because of how successful they are and how dominant they are. But there's somebody that you always know that you're going to get their best every single time you play them. The rest of the league, they're trying to find the next Mahomes. That's why these teams are willing to give up so much to get the number one pick from the Bears to get Caleb Williams. That's why he's getting so much hype, because everybody wants to get the next Mahomes. Because when you have somebody this good, he makes it easier to win. Because he's damn near unstoppable. Steve Wilkes was on the sideline pulling out all the strings, pulling out every single trick that he had in that defensive playbook, and it was not working. It's just like the damn dude was possessed, it felt like. It just felt like it was destiny for Mahomes to win this Super Bowl. That's why the NFL can't stop him. Nobody else has him. Everybody else wants him. Even if you do have a Josh Allen or Lamar, you still would take Mahomes. And these are two of the most gifted quarterbacks ever. That tells you how much of an impact Mahomes has on the league. There are so many great quarterbacks that didn't win championships because of Brady. Peyton Manning, Big Ben, couldn't get past Brady. You know, like, it's crazy that one player, even though this is a team sport and there's 11 guys on the field, can have this big of an impact on winning and losing. Patrick Mahomes is that dude, man, and the NFL doesn't have an answer for him. He just knows how to win. Other quarterbacks don't know how to win, at least against him. It took Joe Burrow in Cincinnati a damn defensive masterclass performance to stop this dude. They forced him to have two interceptions, 56 yards in the second half. They played him again in the 2023 AFC Championship, and it was a way different ball game, and Kansas City got it done because Joe Burrow threw an interception late in that game. Mahomes, what did he do? He didn't have the costly mistakes in the fourth quarter. He was better than Joe Burrow. And unless you can outplay this dude in the fourth quarter, you're going to have a hard time finding ways to beat him. It's just hard to win against Patrick Mahomes. And this dude is going to continue to win until there's a quarterback that's able to step up to the plate and show up the final few minutes of the ball game, the final two-minute drive to put his team in position to win. Are you going to be that quarterback, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, or are you going to continue to allow Patrick Mahomes to continue to get it done the last 2 minutes and make it look easy? It's like it's effortless for Patrick Mahomes, just like it was effortless for Tom Brady. It's like you knew if Tom Brady had the ball in his hands, no matter how much time was on the clock, he was going to win the game. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes. The NFL, they're trying to catch up to this man. They can't stop him because these other quarterbacks don't know how to outplay him when it's all on the line. And that's what separates Patrick Mahomes from the rest of the NFL. That's why he continues to win. And that's why a lot of NFL fans are growing frustrated. They're getting sick and tired of continuing to see the Chiefs win the Super Bowl every year. What's the point of watching if we already know who's going to win? Well, if you want to get some parity in the league, let's start rooting for some other quarterbacks to finally up their game and pull through in the fourth quarter against Mahomes. The NFL, they don't have an answer. And Mahomes is probably going to end up becoming the GOAT. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up winning 10 Super Bowls when it's all said and done. He could be like Wilt Chamberlain or Will Russell or Bill Russell. Another Super Bowl, another choke job out of Kyle Shanahan. This was one of those games where it looked like the 49ers did everything they could to win, and yet it wasn't good enough. They pulled out the kitchen sink, and no matter what they did, Mahomes was just inevitable. Now, this game, in my opinion, wasn't lost for the 49ers because of Kyle Shanahan's decision to get the ball to start overtime. Because at the end of the day, it didn't matter who got the ball first or who got it last. Both teams got an opportunity to possess the ball in overtime. So even if the 49ers would have scored a touchdown first, Kansas City still was going to get another possession. And even if Kansas City would have got the ball first and scored, you were still going to have to get a touchdown. And you still would have been in a situation where you possibly would have to gone for it on fourth down like you should have done instead of taking the field goal. And I get the people who say you got to take the points in the situation, but you're not going up against any other team. You're going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. And you're going up against number 15, Patrick Mahomes. You can't leave the game up to your defense getting a stop when your offense has a prime opportunity to put 7 on the board and make it even harder for Kansas City to win the game. And they were going to go for 2. So you potentially could have won the game even if you would have given up a touchdown. It just made no sense playing it safe there when you know how good Mahomes has been playing the last couple of drives. And no matter how much confidence you have in your defense, when you have Patrick Mahomes on the other sideline, you don't give him an opportunity to win the game. You got to go win the game yourself. And that's why the 49ers lost. Kyle Shanahan played it way too safe in this game, at least to me. And yeah, there were times when they were being aggressive. They were sending pressure, sending extra guys, blitzing Patrick Mahomes. But when they were sending pressure at Mahomes in the fourth quarter, it wasn't working because he was ready for it. He was prepared. And those were situations where they really should have just played it safe instead of trying to blitz Mahomes. Because when you blitz Mahomes, you get effed up, especially in the fourth quarter. I don't know what Steve Wilks was thinking trying to blitz Mahomes. And then what was really the deciding factor when I knew Kansas City was going to win the game was when they converted on fourth and one. If the 49ers couldn't get it done on 4th-and-1, you knew KC was going to drive down the field and continue their Super Bowl dominance on the NFL or their dominance on the league, because you knew that the 49ers defense was eventually going to get winded. And once you get into the red zone and you start seeing players with their hands on their hips, you know what time it is. And those players, once they saw Patrick Mahomes get that big run to put KC in the red zone, and eventually he hit Mecole Hardman for the game-winning touchdown, it was all but inevitable because they couldn't get off the field in 4th-and-1. If they would have got off the field in 4th-and-1, that would have been ball game. But instead, Mahomes picks up 8 yards, gets another big run, and that's all she wrote. You see, the 49ers, they had every opportunity to win this game. They couldn't capitalize off any turnovers from Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes had an interception the first drive of the second half. What did San Francisco do with it? Nothing. They couldn't even turn it into a field goal. When they got the Isaiah Pacheco fumble early in the ball game, they did nothing with it. They had to punt. When you're going up against Mahomes, you got to make them pay for mistakes. You got to make Kansas City pay for mistakes. You just can't get turnovers and do nothing with them. And that's why the 49ers lost. You see, like, they weren't aggressive. They couldn't find ways to get Kansas City off the field and crucial downs. And on the opposite side, your offense couldn't find a way to keep drives alive and crucial downs. You were terrible in third down situations. Absolutely terrible. A big reason for that was because Steve Spagnuolo, his blitzes were getting home. And Kyle Shanahan, something that I've noticed about this offense all season long is that anytime they go up against blitz-heavy teams like the Minnesota Vikings, the Cleveland Browns, and the Baltimore Ravens, this offense has struggled because Kyle Shanahan's offense just seems to not be able to have any counterpunches for defenses that are heavily aggressive. Like when the 49ers, you know, sent pressure on Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, what did he have? He had check routes, or he had check downs. He had hot routes. He had somebody who was going to be open just in case the 49ers were sending extra guys. The 49ers offensively didn't have that. When Kansas City was sending everybody, Brock Purdy was left out there to dry. Nobody was open. No check down, no nothing. Then Kyle Shanahan in the second half, he gets away from running the football during a stretch in the third quarter. When you have a guy like Chris McCaffrey, who you're paying all this money, who you traded for and is regarded as one of the best running backs of this generation, why would you not give him the ball in the biggest game of the year coming after halftime to try to set a tone and try to keep Mahomes off the field? It makes no sense for you to become pass heavy and turn into something that you're not. Why are you getting away from what got you here? What got you to the Super Bowl has you being able to run the football effectively with CMC, utilizing play action and making big plays happen through that. But you get into the third quarter and all of a sudden you say, F the run game, we're going to go Mike Leach, Lincoln Riley with it. And it backfired in your face. There was one point when the 49ers went 3 and out like on 3 or 4 straight drives. Kyle Shanahan, for some reason, I don't know what it's been lately, but you look at the Packers game, even the NFC Championship against the Detroit Lions, his play calling is not consistent in big games. Maybe it's because he overthinks it a little bit too much. Maybe he just gets a little bit tired and he second guesses himself. But the play calling in the second half was absolutely abysmal on Kyle Shanahan. Yes, they did score, but you should have been trying to play ball control. You should have been trying to play keep away from Mahomes, putting the ball more on the ground with CMC. Even though Kansas City's run defense was pretty good, they held CMC to under yards. He should have had 30 carries in this game. He should have been running the offense. Deebo Samuel was nowhere to be found. Brandon Ayuk wasn't really doing too much. Like, he made a couple of plays here and there, but not all that often. And then George Kittle got absolutely shut down. So at that point, the only consistent star player that you have was CMC. So why not give him more carries on the ground? You got him involved in the passing game, but you should have been giving this, you should have been giving the ball to CMC damn near every single play. Didn't really understand the play calling in the third quarter out of Kyle Shanahan. And just the whole entire second half. The play calling was way better in the first half when he was playing complimentary football instead of when he became one-dimensional in the second half. I don't know. Maybe the pressure just gets to be too much for him. And you know what they say about pressure? It either bursts pipes or makes diamonds. And every time that pressure is on Kyle Shanahan, the pipes get burst every single time. And then the defense, you know, for as well as they played in this game, all of the talent that you have on the defensive line, and yet you can't find a way to get Mahomes off the field. The last drive of overtime, all you need is four stops and that's game. You got Nick Bosa, one of the best pass rushers in the league. Arik Armstead, Chase Young, a former top three, top five pick in this league. And nobody could stop Mahomes the final possession? It's like this dude was doing everything. He was looking like Michael Jordan on the football field. Running around, looking like Lamar. You know, fooling everybody with the read option. Like, what the hell happened to the pass rush? The pass rush was getting at the Mahomes all game long. But then we get into the fourth quarter, and Nick Bosa and Chase Young are nowhere to be found. Like, what the hell happened? And then the special points miscues. Oh, my goodness. You talk about a game that was won on all three phases by Kansas City. Offense, defense, and special teams. Think about how differently this game would have been if the 49ers didn't get that PAT blocked. If that wasn't blocked, that's a four-point lead that they have. Kansas City has to score a touchdown. And then you have the muff punt, which led to Kansas City getting their first touchdown of the game, and they got the lead 13-10. Special teams really hurt San Francisco in this game, and not enough people are talking about it. The special teams was a disaster, and that was a huge reason why Kansas City ultimately was able to come back and win it. Kyle Shanahan, he's a really good coach. He still is a top three, top five coach because, yeah, he has two Super Bowl losses, but he's been to several NFC championships. He's been to two Super Bowls. Based on resume, he still is one of the more accomplished coaches in the league right now. Is he overrated? A tad bit. Because you would think a head coach who has so many of his assistants in the league as head coaches and offensive coordinators, that he would be able to find a way to engineer a touchdown in overtime instead of having to settle for three. You know who you're going up against on that other sideline. You knew damn well your defense had no chance of in hell of being able to stop Mahomes. You were hoping that your defense could get a stop. You weren't confident that your defense was going to get a stop. You were crossing your fingers, praying to the football gods that they were going to be able to get it done. And it just wasn't a good game plan. It wasn't a good decision. Chase Young played pretty good. And the whole entire defensive line played really well. But when it mattered the most, they were nowhere to be found. Same thing with Kyle Shanahan. Really good coach. But when the game's in the balance, he's nowhere to be found. It's just like he goes from a good coach to a terrible coach in these big-time games when the lights are the brightest in the biggest moments. And his offense had no counterpunch to it. Kansas City, their blitzes were getting home, and every time they sent pressure and it got to Brock Purdy, they put themselves in third and long situations. Ultimately, for Kyle Shanahan to win the Super Bowl, he has to get better at finding ways to win these games in the fourth quarter. Unless the 49ers blew out Kansas City, there was no way I felt they were going to have a shot at winning this thing. If this was going to be a close game, Patrick Mahomes and company were going to win it because they've been battling adversity all season long. The 49ers, a problem that they have under Kyle Shanahan is that throughout the regular season, they don't face as much adversity as Kansas City. Well, at least this season. In the past, they faced a little bit of adversity. Yeah, they had a three-game losing streak at one point, but you knew they were going to turn things around. And then they went on a six-game losing streak, a six-game winning streak right after. They clobbered Jacksonville on the road, and then they got smashed by Baltimore on Christmas Day. You see, Kyle Shanahan, he got to do a better job at learning how to have better decision-making, better judgment, better play calling in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter is what lost this game for San Francisco. This game was never going to come down to who got out to a big lead first. It was going to come down to who was going to be able to get it done when it was all said and done the last 15 minutes. And unfortunately, the 49ers weren't able to do that. You go into overtime, and you were pretty confident Casey was going to win it after San Francisco had to settle for three. At that point, it was all she wrote. I like Kyle Shanahan. He's one of the best head coaches of this decade. But the fact that he keeps coming up short is because he doesn't know how to win close games. There's a reason why, you know, he only has had two career comebacks, and they've all occurred in the playoffs. This team wasn't playing their best football, and this wasn't the best stretch of coaching that we've seen out of Kyle Shanahan. As a matter of fact, I say it's been the worst. And he had a way marginally better quarterback than what he ever had in the Super Bowl when he had Jimmy Garoppolo. Brock Purdy was good enough to win this game. He just wasn't good enough to outplay Mahomes when it mattered. And the reason for that was because of Kyle Shanahan's play calling. Until Kyle Shanahan becomes a better fourth quarter coach, the 49ers are going to continue to have these heartbreaks. Rather, if it's losing in the NFC Championship or coming up short by here in the Super Bowl, until Kyle Shanahan gets better the last 15 minutes of these ball games, this is going to continue to be the end result. Before we move on, if you haven't already, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast. You can find us on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. Shout out to everybody that's on the that's on the live stream right now. Shout out to everybody in the comments. Shout out to Daddy Bars. He said, Chase Young did better than I thought he would. Shout out to Regular. Biggest loss for San Francisco was Dre Greenlaw. Oren Brooks gave up so much. Yeah, man. It was a really tough go for the 49ers in that game once we got into the fourth quarter, man. Let's move on to this. San Francisco suffers. Start that over. The 49ers suffer another heartbreaker in the Super Bowl. What's next for the 49ers organization? Where do they go from here after this 25-22 devastating loss to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? Kyle Shanahan isn't going to go anywhere, okay? There has been a good amount of fans that have been saying that Kyle Shanahan needs to go. It's dumb to fire a coach that has gotten you to two Super Bowls. Okay, you're not going to fire a coach because of a letdown in a Super Bowl, all right? The fact that you were able to get to that game is a testament to how good of a coach Kyle Shanahan is. Hell, a third of the league is running his offense. Everybody's trying to replicate this Kyle Shanahan offense. And he also has several head coaches that used to work under him. Robert Saleh, D'Amico Ryans, Mike McDaniel. So Kyle Shanahan, what he does schematically, how he runs his team, his philosophy to winning, it works. It's good enough to get you to the Super Bowl. And the head coach that's good enough to get you to a Super Bowl has to be good enough to win you a Super Bowl. It's not like the 49ers have been getting blown out and they've been embarrassed in the playoffs. You're not going out like how the Dallas Cowboys go out. It's just one or three plays down the stretch that cost you the ball game. And for the 49ers in this Super Bowl, special teams, not being able to capitalize off mistakes, struggling in third down situations offensively is what hurts you. You don't need to rebuild the team. You don't need to hire a new head coach. All you need is for Brock Purdy to continue to develop, because what's scary to me is that Brock Purdy was an MVP finalist in only his second season. Imagine how good he could be potentially in year three. And if Kyle Shanahan can add some more wrinkles to his offense, maybe utilize more of Brock Purdy's mobility on some design quarterback runs or some zone read keepers, that could add a different element to the offense. Find a complimentary back to Christian McCaffrey. Like, we know Christian McCaffrey is going to get the bulk load of the carries, but in this Super Bowl, you could definitely tell that there were some moments where he was winded and he definitely could have used a few downs off. You feel me? They put Elijah Mitchell in for only one, two plays, maybe three max. But if you can get a complimentary back that could take maybe 5 to 6 touches off of Christian McCaffrey's workload, that would be a huge plus. Plus, it would also increase his longevity. You already know that CMC is an injury-prone player. The fact that he went through all of this season with no injury problems is really rare. And if you're going to get that again, that may be a little bit unlikely. So it's good if the 49ers go and they vest in, bringing in a pretty serviceable RB2 that's good enough to spell Chris McCaffrey when he needs a breather. He obviously was winded in his Super Bowl at times because he was the only offense they were able to have outside of the few receivers that were making plays that nobody really knew too much about. Jawan Jennings, you know, like, we ain't hear Deebo Samuel's name too much. We ain't hear too much out of Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle got clamped. Another thing the 49ers need to do is beef up their secondary. Tre'Varius Ward is solid. Their other cornerbacks, Ambry Thomas and company, they're not that great. I definitely believe that if Jalen Johnson hits free agency, they should go after him. They got the money to do so. You got Brock Purdy on a rookie contract, a really dirt cheap rookie contract. You should be able to improve that second cornerback spot. Hufanga got injured. He's going to be back fully healthy, so I don't think safety is too big of an issue for you. You're insane at linebacker. You're going to have a couple of guys like Chase Young who are going to hit free agency. You're probably going to have to replace some Randy Gregory as well. Find another young pass rusher to pair up with Nick Bosa. Hell, maybe trade for his brother, Joey Bosa. He's on the trade block. They have to get rid of his contract to free up cap space. I think it would be a good investment to bring along Nick Bosa's brother. Plus, you will have good chemistry on the defensive line between the two. Because they're brothers, it would increase the camaraderie in the locker room. It would just mean for a better environment, culture-wise, for San Francisco. Now, Steve Wilks, I definitely believe that he has to go. You cannot let this dude be the defensive coordinator for you next year, because he's not bad. I think he's pretty solid, but he's like a middle-of-the-pack defensive coordinator. If you're going to win a Super Bowl, you're going to need an elite staff, and you're going to need an elite D coordinator. Look who your last two defensive coordinators was. Robert Saleh and Amiko Ryans, who are both head coaches. Steve Spagnuolo is one of the best defensive coordinators in the history of the NFL. You need a good DC if you want to be able to stop a guy like Patrick Mahomes. Why you think the Cincinnati Bengals were able to get past Kansas City in the AFC Championship that one year? Because of Lou Anarumo. His defense shut down Patrick Mahomes in the second half of that AFC Championship game. Steve Wilks, he's a top 15 coordinator. He's a middle-of-the-road coordinator, but he's not one of those guys that's going to be good enough to scheme up a way to stop Mahomes. To stop Mahomes, you need something innovative. You know, maybe a Rex Ryan would even be good. But Steve Wilks, I like him as a person. He's a decent DC. He's just not a championship-caliber defensive coordinator. Moving forward, the NFC West it's about to get really tough for you. But I don't think that that's going to hurt you in terms of making the playoffs. But the LA Rams, they're coming. And I believe that this coming season, in 2024, this year, they're going to be a serious Super Bowl contender. I don't know how the hell the New York Jets have better Super Bowl odds than them. That's ridiculous. But think about what the Rams have done in the draft. They damn near hit on every single rookie that they drafted last year. Kobe Turner. You have Puka Nacua. And then think about some of the second-year guys who were coming on. Kyren Williams, he's going to be going into year three. The Rams are perfectly positioned to win the Super Bowl within the next 2-4 years with the insane amount of young talent that they have on that team. They went from F those draft picks, using those picks to acquire already proven veteran talent, to now going to, you know what, we need those picks. Let's get these guys in and develop them, because now, look at how bright their future is. Matthew Stafford, we know that his playing days are starting to get numbered, but he played at a MVP level. I don't think Matthew Stafford is going anywhere. I don't think he's going to regress, at least within the next 2 years. Now, if he plays 3 more years, then yes, I do think that he's either going to get injured or Father Time is finally going to catch up to him. But for right now, Matthew Stafford has proven to be not only the best quarterback in the division, but probably the best quarterback in the NFC right now. Who else is better than Matthew Stafford? Not Jalen Hurts. Not after what the hell we saw this season. You got the Seattle Seahawks, who, like the Rams, have drafted very well. And they got a team with the roster that's ready to compete for a Super Bowl. But they got a young head coach in the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know about them. I don't know if they're really going to be a challenge to you. But Jonathan Gannon did do some pretty nice things in his first season. They got some really big wins against the Steelers, the Dallas Cowboys. So it does look like that franchise is heading in the right direction based on what we saw year one out of him. But I don't really think the Cardinals are anything to really be worried about. The 49ers have to do a better job of making sure that they can find ways to finish games in the fourth quarter. That's why Kyle Shanahan keeps coming up short. You don't need to make a change at head coach. That would be too drastic for a team that's already there. You're right here. You're right here. For all we know, the 49ers could be 1 or 2 good draft picks away from winning the Super Bowl. They could be 1-2 good free agency signings away from winning a Super Bowl. We don't know. They're in the same position that the Buffalo Bills are in right now. You don't need to let one player, which is Patrick Mahomes, make you just completely change away your franchise, change what works. Patrick Mahomes was the reason you drafted Trey Lance. And Kyle Shanahan saw that nightmare unfold right in front of his face on the sideline. But still, Brock Purdy is good enough to win you a Super Bowl. Continue to build up that team and prove the interior of the offensive line, because your offensive guards and your center, they got absolutely worked by Chris Jones. They were getting bullied up front by Kansas City's D-line. The 49ers, if they can get stronger on the interior offensive line, they can get a better number 2 cornerback. And Kyle Shanahan replaces Steve Wilks with a better D coordinator. The 49ers definitely could find themselves back in this game next season. I know it's hard to get back to a Super Bowl. Most teams that appear in the Super Bowl have a hard time making it back, i.e. the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody thought they were going to make it back. But the 49ers, with how good of a coach Kyle Shanahan is, his ability to assemble a really good coaching staff, D coordinator, and making some improvements on the interior O-line, getting another cornerback, that would be enough for them to get over the hump. At least if you don't have to play Mahomes again. If you have to play Mahomes again, it's no telling how good Kansas City's team is going to be next season, because they weren't that good this season. And they still won the Super Bowl. So, but for the 49ers, I don't think anything drastic needs to change. All you need to do is continue to make your team better, get a little younger, and Kyle Shanahan, get a new D coordinator, and you'll be set. Brock Purdy's performance in Super Bowl 58 is getting talked about by everybody. There are people who are saying that Cam Newton's point was proven right with the fact that Brock Purdy didn't play good enough for the 49ers to win the game. And You got people on the other side of the fence who say that Brock Purdy wasn't the reason why the 49ers lost this game. Brock Purdy, based on what I saw out of him in Super Bowl 58, he played like a top 10 quarterback. And the way I feel about Brock Purdy is that the dude gets way too much hate for no reason. He wasn't the reason why the 49ers lost. Okay, he just couldn't outplay Mahomes. And just like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Tua Tagovailoa couldn't, Brock Purdy couldn't either. That's why Mahomes is one of one. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever touch a football. Brock Purdy, though, I was really encouraged with the fact that he never backed down in this game. Hell, I watched Jimmy Garoppolo the last 7 minutes of the fourth quarter in your last Super Bowl appearance against Kansas City just completely fall apart. He had that big overthrow to Emmanuel Sanders. Brock Purdy, I saw him going back and forth with Mahomes at one point. You know, after you had the muff punt, which Kansas City turned into a touchdown, what did Brock Purdy do? Lead you on a touchdown drive. He hit Jerron Jennings for the touchdown. And then even in overtime, you know, he led you to a field goal, but that's the problem. He led you to a field goal. Mahomes, what did he do? He led Kansas City to the win. That's the difference. And that's the gap between a guy like Brock Purdy versus a quarterback as talented as Patrick Mahomes. You see, Brock Purdy, he didn't play bad. He played really good, but he didn't play great. And when you're going up against an all-timer, you need an all-time great performance. When the Philadelphia Eagles took down the Patriots in the Super Bowl, it was the greatest performance that we've ever seen in Super Bowl history out of a quarterback. Not just out of a quarterback, but a backup quarterback at that. There's a reason why Nick Foles is a Philadelphia sports legend, because that Super Bowl performance that he had against Tom Brady was an all-time performance. When you're going up against a quarterback of this caliber, good isn't going to be good enough to get you to win. No pun intended. You need great. You need all time. Eli Manning, the reason why he's a Hall of Famer is solely based on him beating Tom Brady in the Super Bowl twice. There's a reason why we call him Playoff Eli, because he elevates his game in the biggest moments. And that's why he took down Tom Brady. You see, Brock Purdy, the whole narrative about him being overrated, I don't really quite understand. Because what about him is overrated? Because he's an MVP candidate? So is Dak Prescott. Brock Purdy was an MVP candidate based on statistics and how well he played throughout the season. When you play well and you play at a high level as compared to your counterparts, you get recognized and you get put in an MVP discussion. MVP isn't always about who's the most valuable player all the time. Sometimes it's about who's just putting up the best numbers. But even then, I still think that Brock Purdy's value is extremely undervalued simply for where he was drafted. Since he was the last pick of the draft, he has this Mr. Irrelevant label on him. People think that he's nothing more than a beneficiary of having a tailor-made situation around him with a great supporting cast and one of the best offensive minds in NFL history. But he had a way better performance in the Super Bowl than what Jimmy Garoppolo did. People keep trying to say he's Jimmy G 2.0. I don't see Jimmy G 2.0. Jimmy G wasn't making the big throws in the fourth quarter and overtime that Brock Purdy was. Brock Purdy was really good in this Super Bowl. Really good just doesn't get you a win against Mahomes. But I'm so tired of hearing guys like Shannon Sharp continue to demean this dude when we really should be celebrating him. He was the last pick of the freaking draft, man. Like, Mr. Irrelevant is nothing more than a meme to most people. And he led this team to the Super Bowl. I almost say carry. He didn't carry them, but he led them to the Super Bowl. And you can have confidence in Brock Purdy throwing the football. You couldn't have confidence in Jimmy G. There were several times that the 49ers came up short of making it to the Super Bowl because they didn't trust Jimmy Garoppolo to throw the ball, especially with the game on the line. You don't have that same situation with Brock Purdy. You can trust him to throw the ball late. You can trust him to make good decisions. It's just that him going up against a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you were going to need an A++ performance. And instead, he gave his A-minus performance. I really do believe Brock Purdy played really well. He started this game out really hot. And then he got really hot late in the fourth quarter. You know, it's just Mahomes is just one of one. And that's really what I take away from Brock Purdy's performance. You can say he had two big overthrows to Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, but he didn't even overthrow Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk just couldn't track the ball and stop running his route. Brock Purdy had a really good performance in Super Bowl 58. I don't give him any of the blame for why the 49ers lost this game. I put the blame mainly on Kyle Shanahan not being able to make good decisions and make the right calls in the second half of Super Bowl 58. And that's why the 49ers came up on the losing end. I want to give you guys my list of 10 rookies that really stood out to me from this NFL season. I'm going to start off with CJ Stroud. He had the greatest rookie season ever for a first-year quarterback. In the span of only one season, the Houston Texans went from the pits of despair to being a relevant team, winning the AFC South, which nobody thought they would be able to do, and winning a playoff game. CJ Stroud, to me, he's already a top five quarterback. And did you know that he finished ninth in MVP voting this year? At one point this season, he was an MVP candidate. Eventually, he started to come back down to earth a little bit, but he still played at an insanely efficient level. He had arguably the best touchdown to interception ratio in the league, 23 TDs, the 5 interceptions. He won Offensive Rookie of the Year. So he definitely was a rookie that stood out to me from this season, and probably everybody, because I don't think anybody expected CJ Stroud to play as well as what he did. Hell, I thought he was going to be a top 10 quarterback, him and Bryce Young, year one, right out the gate, but I didn't think he would be playing like that. Like, it was unbelievable how well CJ Stroud was playing. Puka Nacua, I didn't know who the hell this dude was before the season started. All I saw was his name on my fantasy football waiver wire. And I remember Brett Coleman talking about him during the draft process and how he was an underrated gem. And if he could stay healthy, he could really be a good receiver. So I said, you know what? Brett Coleman was talking about him, so I'm going to just pick him up. And this dude saved my fantasy football season. I had no receivers. If it wasn't for him and the other guy that I have on this list, my wide receiving core would have been absolutely pitiful. Puka Nacua, he led all rookies in receiving yards. He is a monster after the catch. It's like when he gets the ball, he turns into a damn running back. He's big. He's physical. He's a really good blocker. There are a good amount of people who also believe that Puka Nacua is going to overtake Cooper Kupp for being the number one wide receiver in Sean McVay's offense. Cooper Kupp, he struggled to stay healthy. His play kind of has been, it's not like he's had an insanely down year, but ever since he had that all-pro season, when he started to become a household name, he kind of hasn't been able to play up to that same level ever since. Puka Nacua, he has way better measurables, a way better athlete than Cooper Kupp. Puka Nacua moving forward, to me, he's going to become a top five receiver. He's a good route runner. He gets open. He's damn near unstoppable after the catch. Puka Nacua is one of my favorite players in the league, and he was another rookie that stood out to me this season. Now, the next guy that I have on this list, he got robbed for Defensive Player of the Year. That's Devon Witherspoon. When you take a cornerback, top five, top 10 in the draft, you're expecting instant impact, all-pro caliber play, and that's what Seattle got out of the Devon Witherspoon this year. There were moments when he gave up a couple of huge plays here and there, but I remember watching Seattle play the Cincinnati Bengals and their whole entire secondary getting destroyed by Ja'Marr Chase until they put Devon Witherspoon on him, and Devon Witherspoon absolutely locked up Ja'Marr Chase. I ain't hear Ja'Marr Chase name being called after they put Devon Witherspoon on him. Devon Witherspoon was not only great in coverage, but he also was utilized in a lot of different ways. They were sending him on blitzes. He's a great tackler, really physical. He has 3 sacks. He has a couple tackles for loss. Devon Witherspoon is everything that you want in a cornerback. Good in coverage, great in man-to-man coverage, really good when it comes to chipping in on the run game. Most cornerbacks are scared to tackle. Devon Witherspoon, he loves to tackle. He loves being physical. That's part of his game. I thought he really was going to win Rookie of the Year. I was really surprised that Will Anderson won Rookie of the Year over him, but you also got to take into account that the Texans made it to the playoffs. They had more success than Seattle, and Seattle wasn't really talked about that much during the second half of the season because they went ice cold, and that's when the people who were talking so much and so highly about Devon Witherspoon during the first half of the season, they started to become quiet during the second half because nobody was really paying that much attention to Seattle. I truly believe that Devon Witherspoon got robbed for Defensive Player of the Year. He should have won it. He was stuffing up the stat sheets. He had 79 tackles as a cornerback. I mean, there's nothing that Devon Witherspoon can't do. And he clamped up one of the best receivers in the game. Tank Dell was my favorite wide receiver coming out of last year's draft. If you guys have been tuned in with the podcast for at least the last year, you guys would know that Tank Dell was going to be one of the biggest steals from last year's NFL draft. And when I look at Tank Dell, I look at a wide receiver that is incredible at creating separation. He just knows how to get open. Everybody was saying, oh, look at his size. He's only 5'8", 5'9", 160-something pounds. It doesn't matter when you know how to get open. If he never would have got injured, which it was dumb that Houston even had him in that situation to get injured to begin with, because look how small he is. Why is he blocking on the goal line? It would have been way better and way smarter if you just put a bigger body receiver in that situation, especially if you knew that you were going to run the football. But if he would have played the whole entire season, he would have had just as good as numbers as what Puka Nacua had. He was on pace for 1,400 receiving yards and 10 touchdowns. And he was a third-round pick. C.J. Stroud wanted Tank Dell. The Texans came up to him. They was like, hey, man, like, who you want? He was like, man, y'all got to drop my boy Tank. And he was smart. C.J. Stroud is better at drafting wide receivers than what Bill Belichick was when he was with New England. Tank Dell, this is my favorite wide receiver in the NFL right now. And I am insanely biased towards him because he is from Florida. But I had him on my fantasy football team, too. I ain't pick him up from the waiver. I actually drafted him because I was high on him. And I was like, there's no way this dude isn't going to get any playing time when his best friend's the quarterback. And the quarterback was the one who told the Texans to draft him. Plus, he knows how to get open. When you know how to get open, it's hard to keep you off the field, despite how small you may be. And what was even more surprising to me was that he was lining up on the outside. I never thought that he would be playing outside receiver. I thought that he mainly would be stuck in the slot. And that tells you how good of a receiver he is. So, Tank Dell is next up on this list. The next guy that I have, he was drafted after Bijan Robinson. Many people were really surprised that the Lions drafted him. They said that it was a terrible decision, but it resulted in the Detroit Lions having one of the NFL's most explosive offenses this year. And him and David Montgomery were the best 1-2 punch in the NFL this year. He's Chris Johnson reincarnated. Instant acceleration every time he touches the football. He thinks It's crazy that Jahmyr Gibbs, he had so many big runs this year where it was just a small little crease. He got through it and all of a sudden he was off to the races. His instant start-stop is ridiculous. And people compared him a lot to Alvin Kamara. I don't see Alvin Kamara. I get it that they have very similar skill sets in terms of what they can do, catching the football out of the backfield, lining up as a wide receiver, which we didn't really see him do that much of. He definitely is a way more capable receiver than what he displayed this year, but he's way more Jamal Charles and Chris Johnson than me, although he's a way better catcher of the football than what any of those two guys were. But Jahmyr Gibbs, he's special. This dude is a freak, and he's one of my favorite players. He's going to be one of those guys that I draft on all of my fantasy teams every single year because he can kill you in so many different ways. Jahmyr Gibbs and what we thought was a really bad pick turned out to be a great pick by the Detroit Lions. And I was really surprised that they ended up taking him. You know, I wasn't shocked per se, but I was more so surprised. I was just like, you know, they already got David Montgomery, so why are they going ahead and drafting him? It's like, it's not bad because he's not just a running back, he's a weapon. You feel me? But it's the fact that they made it work with him and David Montgomery, and they got both of those two guys a pretty good workload, and both of them were top 10 backs this season. Will Anderson, defensive rookie of the year, did he deserve it? I'm not going to say that he didn't, but I definitely would have picked Devon Witherspoon instead. But he had 7.5 sacks. He had 32 pressures. And when I watch Houston play, when he was healthy, he may not have always been getting to the quarterback and getting a lot of sacks, but he came damn near close to, and he also was a force against the run. He was really good against the run. You probably could say he was better against the run than he was against the pass in certain games. Will Anderson, look out for him in 2024. I expect him to be an all-pro. My expectations for him this upcoming season is going to be somewhere between 12 and 16 sacks, and he definitely is going to be in the running for a defensive player of the year. There's a reason why Houston traded up for him. They got a franchise QB, and they got a franchise pass rusher, which pass rushers are the second most important position in the game because nobody else affects the quarterback more than edge rushers. So, although the decision to give him defensive rookie of the year was a little bit shocking to me, I don't think it was outrageous. Devon Witherspoon just had way more of a bigger impact with what he did against the run for Seattle, what he did in pass coverage, but it wasn't insanely outrageous. I just thought it was a bad decision. Sam LaPorta is the second Detroit Lion that we have on this list. Normally, when you draft these tight ends, they don't have the kinds of seasons as a rookie that Sam LaPorta had. The tight end position is one of the hardest to make the transition from college to pro when you play, because not only do you have to learn the routes and the terminologies that the receivers have to learn, but you also have to learn the protections, pass blocking, run blocking. Sam LaPorta mastered all of that. He damn near could have been an all-pro. He was a top three, top five tight end this season. Who else could you say was better than Sam LaPorta outside of Travis Kelce and George Kittle? And I may say that during the regular season, he was better than Travis Kelce. Hell, he caught 10 touchdown passes. During the regular season, Travis Kelce looked washed. You normally don't see this kind of first year out of a guy as young as Sam LaPorta. Normally, it takes tight ends 3 to 4 years in the league to produce anywhere close to the kind of stats that Sam LaPorta put up as a rookie. He was insanely impressive to watch this year. Jalen Carter, y'all know I love me some Mr. Timothy Carter. He started out really strong this season. The first half of the season, not only did he look like defensive rookie of the year, but he also looked like he was a defensive player of the year candidate also. But during the second half, we didn't really hear his name being called as much, but he still finished with 6 sacks, which is insane as an interior defensive lineman. When you can get a D tackle that can produce you 6 or more sacks consistently, that's a really good defensive lineman, because you don't find a lot of D tackles that are really good at rushing the quarterback. That's why Jalen Carter went as high as what he did. He had 2 forced fumbles and a fumble recovery, and he also had a touchdown as well. I'm really excited to watch Jalen Carter's growth and development next season. I really believe he can become a more athletic version of Ndamukong Suh. This dude is a game wrecker. He's a game changer. And if he ends up reaching that potential that everybody saw into him when he was regarded as the best player in last year's draft, he's going to be scary. And him and Jordan Davis on Philly's D-line next year with their new defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, they could be some studs. Don Kincaid, you normally don't see 2 rookie tight ends lighted up the way Sam LaPorta and Don Kincaid did. But Sam LaPorta was good. Don Kincaid, he wasn't too far off. And he probably could have put up the same numbers that Sam LaPorta did if he wasn't behind Dawson Knox for the first half of the season. Once Dawson Knox got injured, that's when Don Kincaid really stepped it up a notch. He got more targets. And he became the second option in the passing game for Buffalo other than Stephon Diggs. Yeah, you did have Davis, but Don Kincaid was really the go-to guy for Josh Allen on third down situations. He had 73 receptions for 673 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. When he was coming out of Utah, he got a lot of Travis Kelce comparisons, and I watched him a lot when he was playing at Utah. He was not only their best tight end, but he was their best receiver. Anytime you're a tight end and you're your college team's best weapon on offense, you're a stud. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we see out of Don Kincaid a year or two. And lastly, I got Zay Flowers. Zay Flowers is the only first-round wide receiver that I have on this list. He may not have been as impressive as a guy like Jordan Addison, but he was way more consistent than any other rookie wideout not named Puka Nacua and Tank Dell. He was the second best option on the Ravens passing attack, not named Mark Andrews. And when Mark Andrews went down, he really became that number one option for Lamar. And this is on the receiving corps that has Rashad Bateman, who also was a former number one pick, and OBJ. Zay Flowers really stepped up for the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson this season. Really electric after the catch. Also a really good deep threat. A little bit concerned about the off-the-field legal issues that he has going on, but hopefully that gets cleared up and he doesn't face any troubles from that, because the future is bright for him in Baltimore. He could turn out to be the best wide receiver in the history of the Baltimore Ravens organization. They haven't really ever had an elite receiver. I can't recall the last time Baltimore had a true number one or somebody who you could say was an elite receiver. Marquise Brown was really good, but he's a good number two. He's not really a Batman. Zay Flowers has proven that he can be that number one guy for you. You know, he may be 5'9", 180-something pounds, but he doesn't look like the smallest guy when he's on the field. He looks like he's pretty built. And he can take some pretty huge contact. Zay Flowers is the second wide receiver that I have on this list. And these are my standout rookies from the 2023-2024 NFL season. Let me know your comments down below. I know there's going to be some people that are going to be upset. I know people are going to be like, where's Rashee Rice? Like, Rashee Rice was really good, but it's like I only could put 10. So if I make an all-offense list of standout rookies, he definitely will be on there. I just feel Zay Flowers and Puka Nacua were better than Rashee Rice, but he's really good too. You guys don't know how excited I am right now to be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. If you didn't know, the Steelers are the leading favorites to land Chicago Bears current quarterback Justin Fields. And Adam Schefter went on the Pat McAfee show not too long ago, and he said that reportedly, Mike Tomlin is a really big fan of Justin Fields, and when he was coming out of Ohio State, he was really high on him. And the Steelers, they got a quarterback situation right now. They don't have a starting quarterback. Mason Rudolph allegedly doesn't intend on coming back to Pittsburgh. Even if they offer him, he wants to go elsewhere, and I don't blame him. When you're the third-string quarterback behind two QBs that aren't better than you, yeah, I understand your frustration. I really wish the best for Mason Rudolph for saving our season. But Kenny Pickett isn't it, all right? And if you trade for Justin Fields, that shows you that Kenny Pickett, his time as QB1 in Pittsburgh is over. Justin Fields, all he needs is a change of scenery. He needs a true good head coach, and that's what Mike Tomlin is. Now, he's not an offensive-minded head coach. He's a defensive-minded guy, but he's one of those coaches that is going to resonate well with Justin Fields because he's going to believe in him. He's going to instill a lot of confidence in him. And then the division that has Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and maybe a prime Deshaun Watson, if he ever reverts back to the level that he was playing at in Houston, you need a Justin Fields if you want to be able to has success in this division. Now, I'm basing this based on how good Justin Fields can become. Right now, he's still a pretty good QB. But if Mike Tomlin can unlock his full potential with Arthur Smith being the offensive coordinator, he can go toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson if he ever goes back to that elite level. I always got to say that because we haven't heard about Deshaun Watson being good since Houston. He always could revert back to that level. But if Mike Tomlin in the Pittsburgh Steelers pull the trigger on trading for Justin Fields, it's goodbye to Kenny Pickett. They're going to say it's going to be a quarterback competition, but let's just be honest. Justin Fields is a way better quarterback right now than what Kenny Pickett is. He may have a terrible record as a starting quarterback, but it's only because he's with the organization that is terrible with the quarterback position. Chicago is where quarterbacks' careers go to die. Yeah, we have Mitch Trubisky, who came from Chicago, but Justin Fields is way better than Mitch Trubisky. That's why he ended up running them out of town. That's why they drafted the dude in the first place. Arthur Smith may have been a bad head coach, but he still is a pretty good offensive coordinator. There were a lot of other teams that wanted Arthur Smith's services too, and he runs the kind of offense that definitely could use a guy like Justin Fields' skill set. He runs a lot of read options, design quarterback runs. That's what the Steelers need. They need an athlete at quarterback. Kenny Pickett isn't really that good of an athlete. All right, and he's not that good of a thrower neither. He doesn't have a strong arm, and he overthrows easy, open wide receivers. Justin Fields is the guy I want at quarterback for Pittsburgh this year. And I was really upset when the Steelers made the stupid decision to pass on Lamar Jackson in the 2018 NFL draft for Terrell Edmonds. That shit really pissed me off. And the fact that Lamar went to the Ravens made me even hotter. So the Steelers could make up for their terrible decision to pass on Lamar by trading for Justin Fields. And all you got to do is give up a second or third round pick. If all it takes is getting Justin Fields a third round or second rounder, give it up. I mean, we need a franchise quarterback here, people. We've had terrible quarterback play since 2019 after Big Ben fell apart against the Washington Commanders. Justin Fields is everything that Steelers need in a quarterback. Great athlete, strong arm. He's not the greatest passer in the world, but I like him more than Kenny Pickett throwing the football. At least he'll take shots downfield to George Pickens and Deontay Johnson. And a lot of the reason why Chicago fans want to keep Justin Fields is because they feel he just needs better receivers. So he already has that with George Pickens and Deontay Johnson, Pat Freiermuth. You got Jaylen Warren, Najee Harris in the backfield. Justin Fields with the Pittsburgh Steelers, bro, I don't think people would want to see us. And I know I sound hella biased right now, but I really believe that if we get Justin Fields, we really could make a run next season. Maybe not at a Super Bowl, but we could definitely win the division. Justin Fields is a really great athlete. You know that you're going to get 1,000 yards rushing out of him, and you already got to account for our two good running backs already in Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. So we're going to have a top five rushing attack in the league just based on us getting Justin Fields. So he already is an upgrade from Kenny Pickett in that aspect. He's going to elevate our rushing attack. The Steelers' rushing attack has ranked in the bottom half of the NFL for the last couple of years. You'll fix that by getting one of the best running quarterbacks in NFL history. He may have only played like a half a decade or whatnot, but he already has had 1,000-yard seasons on the ground. So you have a 1,000-yard quarterback on the ground with Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris. That equals top five rushing offense, at least top 10 rushing offense. And then you got somebody who is going to be way better at generating big plays. I'm not high on Kenny Pickett. And my guy in the comment section regular says, I don't think Pittsburgh has utilized Pickett to his full potential. He was really good at Pitt. But the thing with Kenny Pickett is that he was good at Pitt. And that was only one season. He was like a four-year starter at Pitt. And it took him 4 years to have a somewhat good season. And then Kenny Pickett on the NFL level, he just doesn't have it. You know, you look at Kenny Pickett back there, he doesn't really look like an NFL quarterback. He overthrows open wide receivers. He doesn't have a good deep ball. The only thing you can say about Kenny Pickett is that he does elevate his game sometimes in the fourth quarter. But we need somebody who can play good for an entire 60 minutes. Justin Fields going to a stable organization like Pittsburgh with a stable coaching staff, with the coaching of Mike Tomlin, he could be really special. I really do. I really hope that the Pittsburgh Steelers pull the plug on Justin Fields. He would be such a massive upgrade for this offense. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. If you enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. Wherever you get your podcasts from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. Give us a 5-star review, and I will see you guys Thursday with another episode.